Welcome to The Fractional Life. I'm your host, John Arms, along with our co-host, Jason Voyevich. We're obsessed with the market shift away from the full-time employment workforce to what most are calling a fractional world or gig life, particularly as it relates to marketing and communications. If you're in marketing and communications, we hope you find new ideas, inspiration, and motivation to join the fractional workforce here. The Fractional Life is a production of Unified Funnel Metrics, your ticket to joining the fractional world. Welcome, and we're glad you're here.
Today we're talking about pedigree, Jason. You and I had talked about the idea of what does pedigree mean in terms of getting a job or getting a gig thing or getting a fractional thing as opposed to other options people have in order to get in front of somebody saying, I'm worth your time. I can help you. And as you put it very nicely, you and I often play the role as business jaywalkers. You know, how do we walk against the norm? And pedigree has come up a lot. It's historically something that people put on as sort of a lead thing. I did this and I did that. And what we're realizing in the gig workforce and the fractional workforce is everybody's got a good pedigree.
Well, that's the thing. You know, I think once you pass 35, especially once you pass 40, 45, who are you going to find out there that doesn't have an impressive pedigree? Mm-hmm. You know, who are you going to find that has not worked at big companies that you've heard of or done really impressive things? I mean, resumes are like that too. But, you know, I think about it in terms of, okay, I'm at a networking meeting and I'm a UFM fractional, you know, chief revenue officer, chief marketing officer, what you call yourself isn't important. But I'm up in front of a group of people, 20 people, and I need to say, I'm Jason Voyevich. I'm a fractional chief marketing officer. Here's what that means. How do I introduce myself to people? And what I hear in a lot of networking meetings is people get up, especially if they're consultants, and they talk about who they are. You know, I work for this company, and here are the things that I've done in my career. They kind of go through their CV or their resume, and you know, they highlight, you know, I worked at Target, I worked at Best Buy, I worked at this, I worked at that. And honestly, if you're in Minneapolis, everyone's worked at Target. Mm-hmm. Everyone's worked at Best Buy. Mm-hmm. Everyone's worked at Medtronic. If you're at, you know, if you're in Silicon Valley, everyone's, you know, pitched Sequoia. Everyone's, you know, mm-hmm. worked at Google. It just isn't impressive. And what I see just when I observe, and I think, John, you've observed the same thing, is people around in the room, their eyes are glazing over. Mm-hmm. And like, yep, I get it. The only people you tend to attract are the people who tend to be impressed by things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But be impressed by pedigree.
Mm-hmm.
And we found that, yeah, you know, it certainly feels good because we're our own most mm-hmm. important subject. You know, we're our own favorite subject. But it doesn't really matter to other people. And we want to start to talk with you in this podcast about how to, okay, you got to not do that.
Yeah, yeah. So this is John and Jason with UFM, Unified Funnel Metrics. And today we're talking about pedigree and how you talk about yourself in a business context. The thing I like to look at in terms of what you were just describing is how do you move the ball forward? You know, you're with somebody for a reason. They're listening to you for a reason. And if you think about it just in terms of a bar and back in your dating days and all you did was talk about how great you are and the things, places you've been and all of that, it's hard to get dates, you know, if you look at it through that context. And there's a reason for that. But if you start talking about, you know, your dreams or how you can help somebody, what you can do for somebody else or shared things, all of a sudden you've got an engaged person. Engaged audience. And so when you think about that in the business context, the norm is I'm going to stack up what my history has been. Yeah. The reaction, which is anti-progress, is eyes glazed over. I've heard from 40 people just like you. But let's provide some solutions here. How do we help marketers, those in the fractional community, move forward and sort of change their thinking on how they speak about themselves?
Yeah, I think that you know, what I've noticed is, you know, John, you and I have been in front of thousands of people now. Mm-hmm. talking about sales and marketing. And if you talk with sales and marketing people, you know, everybody's got their own, you know, everyone has their own spin on it, their own take on it, their own little kind of nuance on what sales and marketing is or what value it brings. But when you get out of that, and most of the time with a fractional marketer, you're outside of that beltway, and you're speaking with bank presidents, and you're speaking with, you know, operating officers of manufacturing companies and finance folks, they don't give two shits about any of the nuance we have. Here's what they know. They know that if you talk with any of them, and I had a wonderful conversation, a guy who was actually an ex-advertising agency guy, PR agency guy, who had started running a training business here in Minneapolis. And when I told him, I was calling all of my contacts, and I was saying, hey, I'm going into business as a fractional CMO. I just wanted to let you know and kind of get your take. And he stopped me right away and he said, Jason, I got to tell you, just understand marketing and sales as a business of this size. I had no idea how hard it was.
Mm-hmm.
He had been working on General Mills and kind of big stuff. But he said, when you get down to that mid-size business, sales and marketing is a complete black hole. It's unaccountable. It's very difficult for people to think about. He said, you have got to make it dead simple and really clear what value you can bring to folks like me.
Mm-hmm.
And he took me to task on it a little bit on the kind of the big picture messaging that I had.
Did you address him originally and sort of approach that from a pedigree, you know, academic standing standpoint?
No, I did something almost worse because he knew my pedigree. You know, he knew that because I had worked with him and his company before in a professional context when I was a corporate marketer. But what I did was I just started talking about the different services that I would offer.
Okay.
Like, oh, I would do, these are the types of things I would do. And he said, Jason, I don't give a fuck about any of those things. None of those things matter.
Your menu.
Yeah, the menu. Okay. So it was even worse than the pedigree approach. Mm-hmm. It was the menu approach. But what he forced me to reconsider really early on was, listen, my job as a chief marketing officer, fractional, is to give you an affordable way to unfuck your sales and marketing. Mm-hmm. I know it's hard. I know that you just don't have, you know, you as the small business owner, the medium-sized business owner, you have no way to keep sales and marketing accountable. It's a big black hole. You can't predict it. You need someone you can call who will walk you through the process. I can't promise to fix it all for you. I can't promise to get you the results that you want, but I certainly can get you at the point where you've got someone that you can call on that will help you navigate that mess.
And I like where you're going with this because I have seen and I am guilty of doing something that what you just described is great, is helping them move forward.
Right.
And I have seen time and again where you are in a situation or someone is in a situation where they're talking about their pedigree or what they did for the big company. We did this at, you know, Fortune 500 company one. We did this over there. And over time, I learned that my customer was like, John, that's not us. We're a $50 million company. You're talking about people who are on the, you know, stock exchange. What you did there doesn't apply here. So not only does the pedigree not matter that much to me, the methodologies and practices and just my understanding and ability to sort of transfer that over here doesn't make any sense to me. And I don't think it applies.
Right.
And when you try to, well, it's sort of, what do you mean? I mean, these are good methodologies. Look how good it worked for these big pedigree level folks. That there is a business difference between those two. And I think that's a major sin in marketing and today.
I think so. I mean, I think how many times have we been in a situation where, hey, because Uber did this or Google did this or Apple did it this way, that means it makes sense for you. And I'm not saying that there's nothing you can learn
sure.
from those organizations. That's foolish and wrong. But I can tell you that in my 25 years of doing this, there's a really big difference from what works in the ecosystem at the Fortune 100 level and at the kind of business roundtable 100 level in your community.
Mm-hmm.
The rules are different. What works is different. What doesn't work is different. For one example, you know, I worked on broadcast advertising campaigns where you talked about buying trips, you know, target rating points, and you talked about being on, well, what, you know, what pieces of the cable spectrum are you going to be on and what day parts are you going to be on? I can tell you that it's an obvious example, but, you know, in order to make hay with that, you know, you're in 6 to 7 figure media spend budgets. And there are whole firms that just do media spend like that and optimize all of that. Well, when you go and you talk to even a billion-dollar manufacturing company, that's completely meaningless to them. All of that experience, all of how that works, they are never going to do broadcast advertising. It makes no sense to them. Say, yeah, there are transferable skills, but when you talk about your broadcast advertising experience with a billion-dollar B2B parts manufacturer, of course their eyes should glaze over. And
do you blame them? Do you blame them?
No, absolutely not. And I think to myself, well, you know, well, what if, you know, boy, they should be impressed by that. And you'd think when you say it this way, in this context, it's obvious. It's, well, of course you wouldn't do that. That's, you know, that's not how a salesperson or a marketing person should act. And I would think so. But I see it time and time and time and time again from really smart people who should know better.
Yeah.
And I think that one of the reasons that I feel we created UFM, one of the many, was to simplify sales and marketing to where it's applicable to that, you know, small to mid-sized business. Now, is UFM applicable? Could you apply UFM to Apple or Google? Yeah, I think you could, but the level of complexity that would start to underpin each one of our phases in that methodology would get so complex that you know, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And they've got people who are doing all of these things. It's not to say that I don't think there's value up there, but when you say, hey, there are only 6 stages, and there's only 1 or 2 metrics you're going to track for each segment that you've got, and you should be able to put it on some sticky notes and have it on a wall in front of your office, and that's all you need to manage. Well, is that realistic for Google? No, absolutely not.
Right, yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense for them. It's way too complicated, rightfully so for them. But when you look at that, even that billion-dollar parts manufacturer, are there only maybe a dozen metrics they should be paying attention to in sales and marketing? Yeah, probably.
Yeah,
that's probably enough so that everybody can get on the same page, especially when, boy, just not going to afford all of these different people. They need to know where they're spending their money and how to keep track of it. And if they did that, would they be 80% better than where they're at today? That's the kind of, when you're trying to introduce yourself to someone, having that kind of conversation about their problem and then they, you know, after that, once you say, yeah, John, that's exactly what I'm facing right now.
Yeah,
people will ask you a little bit more about, well, what do you do? How do you, you know, how do you deliver that to me? What in your background gives you the experience to be able to do that for me?
Right.
Then they're asking you for permission to talk. You know, you can talk about yourself in that context. Don't take that and run with it and just kind of say, oh, well, now I have the license to talk about myself for an hour and a half. But, you know, wait till you get permission to talk about yourself and then do it.
And it may not be necessary at all, to be honest with you.
You'd be surprised at how little it is.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times people have signed on with me, signed the paperwork, gotten there like, yep, awesome, ready to get going. And they ask like, oh, well, tell me a little bit about yourself. It didn't matter to them until the point where they're like, oh yeah, I suppose I maybe should ask about you and what you do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then more about your background.
And this is what's happening in UFM since we're designed for the middle, you know, the 60% of our GDP, you know, the businesses that fit in that size, not the top 500 on Wall Street. Love them, but the shaming. I don't want to consider this as like, well, we're shaming you for tramping out your pedigree and your history and all of that. It's a mistake we've all made.
Right.
And quite honestly, because it was a norm, and norms are hard to sort of, it's hard dressing to take off.
Yeah.
and those norms are there. But, you know, for the first half of this podcast, I think we sort of crossed that now. It's like, okay, well, let's, if that's the norm, and let's shuck it off and consider, where do we go forward? And what do we build that relationship on that I feel good about? And a few things come to mind that where you and I trunk and what we've created here is, well, it's about accountability for sure. That's one thing. Humility.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need to talk about myself. You know, servitude. I'm here for you, not for me. It's interesting to me that humility and servitude in the fractional mindset are very, very powerful traits. And they kind of fit with how our operating system works. If you apply other things to it, pedigree, ego, force, it doesn't really work.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's funny. I was reminded, and I'm reminded regularly from, you know, from folks who talk to me and hire me, is that, you know, if you're out there, you hung out your shingle as a consultant, especially a fractional consultant, where you mm-hmm. say, yep, I serve as the chief marketing officer for 7 different organizations on a fractional basis, so it's affordable for them, and I can help guide them to meet their sales and marketing goals. If you just said that and then moved on to, here's the problem with sales and marketing that my clients tend to face, X, mm-hmm. Y, and Z, and you talk about the problems that resonate with other people, what I keep getting reminded of is, just by introducing yourself as a fractional CMO and just exactly what that is and then moving past it, that's all people really need to know about your pedigree. And what it was explained to me once is, listen, if you can go out there and do that, and you can handle 7 organizations at once, or you work with multiple clients at once, and you're the CMO for multiple clients, most people have a hard time doing that job for one
yeah.
client.
Mm-hmm.
They already think, like, wow, this is a SMF. Another one of my clients, SMF stands for smart motherfucker. So, you know, just, you know, thinking about that, saying, hey, they already know, they already assume that you've got all that. You don't need to pound it over their head. You move right past it. People feel like, yeah, this is a person I should listen to. And wow, they're talking about a problem. They can solve a problem that I've been struggling with for a long time. Mm-hmm. I need to talk with that person more.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me more about UFM. How does that work? Mm-hmm. That's the question you want to get.
Mm-hmm.
Is tell me more about what you can do for me is the follow-up question you want. The only way you get there is by talking about the problems you know are going to resonate with that person. You're in front of a bunch of manufacturers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Here's what I've seen from other manufacturers. You're out there doing marketing. You're at a trade show. Sometimes you get a couple of great leads that turn into great clients. Most of the time you walk out of there with some email addresses and nothing seems to happen. You spent a lot of money. Where did it all go? You did some trade ads. What's going on? You've got a 25-year-old,
mm-hmm.
you know, intern doing some social media. You have no idea what's going on there.
Mm-hmm.
You have no way to keep your salespeople accountable. Your revenue targets at the end of each quarter are just a blooming mystery.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound like you?
Yeah.
You know, would you like to not do that anymore? Would you like to have a way that you can at least just a real simple way to keep track of all that? No magic software, no big spending.
Mm-hmm.
Just, do you want a system where you can manage that? And do you want someone who will help guide you through that for a price you can afford?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I do.
Yeah. So as we're here in the last few minutes of our podcast, if you could sort of talk about that a little bit more, is we have displaced historical norms with something that is not software magical thing. We've kind of displaced it with a process and a behavior and mindset change.
Right.
I would love it if you would describe, you know, to anybody listening, how else might I come up? What does that look like? I want to go serve in the fractional capacity to, you know, the middle market.
Yeah.
They're asking you, Jason, what does it look like if I become a UFMer?
Yeah, that's, you know, it's a really good question. There are a lot of people who think, yeah, I can do that. That sounds like something I want to do. It is about service and humility, that you can help a 60% of our GDP get better. Mm-hmm. That's a real mission that resonates with a lot of people, I think. And, you know, so when we think about that, what we created is a way for you to join this community of people. And that's the number one thing. You know, when you subscribe, yeah, there's training. And there's a lot of training. There's 103, 110 lessons.
And growing.
Growing every day. Mm-hmm. Divided up into bite-sized chunks over 5 different sections. So there's a lot that gets you from kind of here to there. So we walk you through the process of, you know, going through your mindset change. That's mm-hmm. the number one, the most important thing. That's where you start. We talk about how to sell yourself and how to market yourself appropriately, like what we've been talking about on this podcast mm-hmm. today.
Yeah.
Is how do you get out there and talk about yourself? We probably need to turn this into a lesson mm-hmm. on just how to have that conversation. We talk about how to manage clients once you get them, because most people who have been full-time employees have never had to manage multiple clients before. I have never had to have mutually exclusive clients that they talk to, where I talk with one client and there's nothing. I might have the same conversation 5 times in a day.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to not be tired of it. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, because yeah. it's totally new to the number 5 person you're talking to, because right. they don't talk.
Right.
You need to learn how to run your business so that it doesn't run you.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, after all of that, it's, well, how does UFM work? How does that operating, that thought process of how to run sales and marketing, how do we unlearn mm-hmm. what we all learned, and how do we simplify it in a way that makes a lot more sense? It's a lot. And, you know, John and I, you know, we're not going to sugarcoat it for anybody
yeah. here.
This is, it's not an easy life, but I tell you what's harder, you know, doing this and investing in yourself
mm-hmm.
or going out and applying for 100 jobs and getting 2 callbacks and getting offered half of what you're making before. You know, fuck that.
Yeah.
Why would I want to do that anymore? That's right. That's not what the market is asking for. The market needs a better way to buy our wisdom and mm-hmm. buy our ability. We need the right mindset. We need to know how to run a business. We need an operating system that we can mm-hmm. run and that's replicable and that doesn't start to own us and take over. Well, that's what we can do.
That's what we put together.
Yeah, this is exactly it.
Yeah, yeah. And when you say our wisdom, we're talking about the entire, you know, community of people who have earned their way to, you know, knowing what works and what doesn't and how they might apply this. They're over 40. They've got yeah. the bullet holes, the wounds, the scars. They get this. That's a huge part of the asset. And I would contend that, you know, you've talked about this. I learn a lot from you, Jason. I listen every now and then. I try to. But you said something, you know, when we were just starting our business, and that was, you know, what do you want to be working on, headwinds or tailwinds?
Right.
And if you looked at marketing and sales in its normal structure, you see headwinds. If you look at where things are going, marketing and sales, and kind of the economy in general, if you think about employment, fractional has tailwinds. And the point the thing I took away from there is all those tailwinds aren't, it doesn't mean everything's perfectly mapped out. Like we're all going to become fractional. Yes, it's become about a third of the economy and there's things, but it's not like it's all mapped out. But that is where the momentum is going in the marketplace. And there's good reason. There's more economic sense. You know, there's a better work model with fractional people in many businesses. In fact, I shared with you last week, somebody told me they're starting to write fractionals into their business plans.
Yeah. And why wouldn't you? Mm-hmm. You know, why wouldn't you? It's become a lot of people think about fractional as, well, I'm going to work for Shipt or I'm going to work for Uber.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's part of the fractional economy. There's no question about that. And there are lots of issues with that. Lots of things you can read online about, you know, how it provides a lot more uncertainty for people who are maybe least able to handle that level of uncertainty. But, you know, we're talking to the people listening to this right now are at the point where you're privileged to be able to create your own destiny here mm-hmm. in a way that other people who are considering driving for Uber are not.
Yeah.
Okay. You've got a certain level of skills that you need to just, all you need is a way to deliver those skills in an economical way that the market responds to. And that's all that this is. So consider yourself privileged and lucky to be able to do that. You just need a way where you can match what you can deliver You know, and that's just basic economics. It's supply and demand. It's no different than that. It's, hey, I can't afford you 40 hours a week, but I can afford you four. Mm-hmm. You just need a way to sell people 4 hours of your time. That's where the market's going. That's what the economies of scale are telling you. It's what businesses are finding, that they can get that kind of value, but they've got to have a system. It isn't just, well, I'm going to hire you for 4 hours a week and hope it works out. I think that's part of that evolution in the market, where if you look at those scalable systems from Shipt or Uber or whatever, they don't rely, they just don't hope like, hey, get in your car and just hope you have a good day today picking people up.
Yeah.
They have a system behind them to match the drivers. They've got a system to figure out the fares. They've got a system to figure out how people get paid. They have a system for managing that, yeah, there are, you know, there are pros and cons, and people kind of argue about certain aspects of it. But I can tell you the way they're successful is they've got a system. You got to have that. If you don't have a system, you're just kind of out there hoping. And hey, if you're really smart and you're really good, you might work it out. It might just work out for you and you'll get a couple of clients, but you'll never be able to do really more than that.
Yeah.
And what we've found in, you know, fractional...
Without, you won't do more when you don't have a systematic approach.
When you don't have a systematic approach, you don't have something like UFM. Where what I found, probably a good place to close the podcast, is what I found, and love you for to comment on this, John, is...
Yeah.
Fractionals who don't have a system, they don't have a UFM or they don't have some other system, they tend to be able to max out at one or two clients, where they just can't scale it. Boy, one or two clients takes them 50 to 60 hours a week because they don't have a way to efficiently manage the time that, you know, and to serve the clients. I don't know, what has been your experience with people that you've met that have been, who've already made this jump, but who don't have a system underneath them?
I see kind of all aspects of that. Certainly the norm of I'm going to charge for chunks of my time, and therefore that creates the value that you need. That is a norm that is shattering. That doesn't mean value. It just means time.
Correct.
And that time needs to equate to value. So... I come to it when I hear people talk about it, that are consultants, they say, geez, you know, I'm contracted for 20 hours, but I'm working 40. And so there goes my margin. And now I can't take those other 20 hours and apply it to somebody else. So without that structure, it's really a very tough way to be in this world. So that would be my number one commentary is if you are basing things on hours served, and that's everything else is sort of gray after that. It's going to be a tough ride. If you are basing it out on value delivered, and we talk about in that the very tangible ways, sales growth, sales operations, sales funnel performance. If you are talking, if you're serving at the behest of those things, then it's not as tough of a road because you're contributing to growth. And no one's asking you to cut your hours back. You're not even having conversations about what you piece your time out as. You're having conversation about where in the customer journey are we broken. And Jason, John, smart UFM marketer, how do you fix it?
Yeah,
it's not a time discussion. So that's my observation, is time is kind of in the killer.
I think that's a good way to circle back. You know, if you're still listening to this, you kind of wondered, well, why do we go off on this tangent?
Mm-hmm.
And bluntly, I was wondering that too.
Well, that happens. You know, it's a podcast. We wander a little bit, but
yeah,
you know.
But think about this, tying this all the way back to how do I describe myself? And, you know, being careful about how you buy someone's time, that you're buying a fraction of someone's time. That's what fractional means. But really, you want to be careful that what you're really talking about is, you know, what value are you going to deliver? I'm going to help you manage the sales and marketing, the customer journey funnel in a way that is accountable, flexible, and simple.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so that you understand what's going on, where it's broken, how to fix it, and how to get the most out of it for the least amount of investment. That's my job. And that's what I help you do on a weekly, biweekly, monthly basis. You pay me based on a fraction of my time, but that's
mm-hmm.
immaterial. That's just that's a number that you can afford in the background that is a lot more valuable than you trying to hire a just out of college person who just doesn't have the experience to do that. So I can deliver a lot more value for a lot less time. But I think you made a really interesting and good point about separating the concept of time from value and being really careful about that. That if it's just I'm selling you X number of hours, you know, how many people have been in I've sold you 4 hours and it really turns into 5 or 6.
Mm-hmm.
You got to stop, thinking about and selling your time that way. I think that's mm-hmm. important. I think it's an important place to close in how do we deliver value? You happen to deliver value. You don't need 40 hours a week to do that.
Right.
Especially if you've got a system, you might only need an hour or two. Who cares what you bill for that time? If it's valuable to the client.
Mm-hmm. And moving the needle for them.
And moving the needle. You know, if that took you 30 seconds to know, don't spend that $50,000. If you just knew that from experience,
mm-hmm.
well, why is that 30 seconds of time?
Yeah.
You know, that's, what's that old story? I think it was a Van Gogh story where someone came up and wanted him to do a sketch on a napkin in a little Parisian cafe. And it might not have been Van Gogh, and it's probably apocryphal. But, the point is, he did a little sketch, and he, gave it to the person. He said, it wasn't this, because they use francs,
mm-hmm.
Francs. He said, it's a thousand francs. And she said, that just took you 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
How is it that much? He said, no, it didn't. It took a lifetime. I think just thinking about value is an important way to finish that, and always value from the perspective of what is your customer going to get out of it? What pain are you fixing? Your pedigree is kind of assumed.
Mm-hmm.
People assume, I kind of don't give two shits if you could do this and you used to be an IT person in a former life, but you figured out how to use this operating system and you can deliver on this. Why would I care that you've never done
mm-hmm.
advertising before? If you can do this, well, why should I care
as
the customer?
Yeah.
Most of the people we're going to be talking to are sales and marketing folks. But if you were in client service or you were in finance or you were in some level of product management, why couldn't you do this? There's no mystery to this.
There isn't any mystery to it. So to circle back, hopefully we've humbly served at our listeners' benefit, to our listeners' benefit, on sharing the idea of your value of your experience and your wisdom is what you deliver, your pedigree and the places you worked. You don't need to lean on them. Have the confidence and humility to lean into what you've learned and the operating system, if you're a UFMer, and the operating system you bring to it, and you'll do great, like a lot of our fractional marketers do. So we're going to close this podcast with a very short plug for an event that we have coming up on September 25th, if you're in the Minneapolis market, Modest Brewing.
That's correct, Modest Brewing. It's in the North Loop.
Mm-hmm.
Off of Washington Avenue,
mm-hmm.
over by Be the Match, if you're familiar with where that is. But great little spot. We've got a room reserved.
Mm-hmm.
And from 4 to 6 p.m. on Wednesday the 25th, we're doing a UFM happy hour.
Mm-hmm.
We've got...
Three lessons. Yep.
I was going to say, there's a beer per lesson, but that might be more than what some people would want to do before dinner.
Yeah.
But at least one, or I think they've got, Spring Grove Pop and some of that other stuff. If you don't want to partake, that's
totally I'm a fan fun. Of the cream soda.
Absolutely.
I like the cream soda, and that'll be from 4 to 6 p.m. You can. We'll leave a little link here in the podcast, of course, to the Eventbrite sign up. If you are at all interested in or are currently in the fractional marketing life, please come. Because this is a window inside what's happening into that third of the economy that is not as common to see. It doesn't happen out there that often. So we hope you come.
For more information, information on joining the Fractional Life, visit www.unifiedfunnelmetrics.com and be sure to subscribe to future podcasts.